I want to appreciate and thank you for the opportunity I have here today, too. This is for my benefit, and I hope that, you know, others can get benefit out of it also. This is a challenge for me, and, you know, I think as Christians we need to get outside of our boxes and challenge ourselves from time to time also. So, again, I hope you do get something out of this. I know I have. You know, and if I say something that you disagree with today, then I apologize. Maybe I'm right. Maybe you're right. We'll figure it out. Because I am probably going to say a few things here today that maybe y'all haven't thought about before. Because I can say that as growing up in the church, I haven't always heard some of the things I've talked about. So, and that's why I'm bringing them to light a little bit to see if it's something that we should start thinking about and talking about a little bit more. So, but, you know, we've all heard the phrase dropping the ball. In sports, you know, you've got somebody carrying the ball, and to progress, he has to have the ball in his hands. And when he drops the ball, you lose that forward progression that we stop all the forward momentum that we have, and somebody, you know, has got to get the ball again, and we got to take them and go and run with it. That's how things go. And so we've always had that phrase, dropping the ball. And I want to see where, as Christians of this congregation, where maybe we're dropping the ball from time to time, and we need to pick the ball back up and start going. As a congregation, we're a team of Christians, and we have to work together with each other to carry the ball. We can't expect one or two people in this congregation to carry the ball for the whole congregation. And in life and as people, that's generally what we do from time to time. If you're in a group of people, man, you're always looking for that smart person, that smart, you know, the smart person in the class. Say, I want to be in his group because he's going to carry the ball and I can sit back here and coast. But for a true efficient team, we need other people to carry the ball from time to time, and everybody's got to do their, you know, to help. As I would say, a lot of times, well, in that institutional and denominational churches, a lot of times they have very organized efforts to do work outside the church. And while their intentions may be good, a lot of people would say that they're not instructed. They don't have the authority to do some of the work that they do with the church's money. And I think most of us would have come to that agreement. But at the same time, if it's not the church's responsibility to do that work, but it is, you know, stated in Scripture to do this, then we need to realize that it's the individuals, and that's what we always talk about. It's not the church's responsibility. It is the individual's responsibility. I feel like a lot of times that's where we drop the ball as Christians. We just sit back and we say, well, yeah, that's not the church's. That's the individuals, and from there, it gets dropped, and we just go on about our lives. We got to look deeper into it. We got to try harder to fulfill that responsibility. If you looked at this church, you might say somebody might be impressed with the amount of people that continuously come into this congregation and come in these seats, and day in and week in and week out, we fill these podium and we fill these seats with the same people. We have a really good, committed group of Christians here. But we might beat some denomination churches in that area. But when it comes to work outside the church, I think a lot of times, because they have that organized effort, they're beating us hands down with things outside the church, outside these walls. And that's where I think we fail sometimes is, yes, we have a great family here, and we come together as a church, and we're committed. We're coming every week. But what are we doing outside this church to really make this church grow and to grow the Lord's church? And that's what I really kind of want to look at today. First issue I want to talk about is what Marshall talked about probably right when he first came here. One of his first sermons I remember coming here, man. It's funny, probably a lot of y'all remember that. He laid down a series of sermons and started laying down the law right off the bat. And it was good to hear. But one of the things he talked about was evangelizing. And I think it truly is where we miss the mark a lot of times as individuals. It is not just the preacher's job to evangelize. And it's not just the elders or the deacons' job to evangelize. Although they might have a better ability to do that because, you know, they're some of the best among us, I believe. they have a greater role in some of these things, but, and, you know, our elders are to lead us and direct us, and they may be better at that than the average person here sometimes. But that doesn't give us an excuse to not try, not to evangelize. And you know, and me coming up here and preaching, I don't really consider that to, you know, it is evangelism, but it's what I'm talking about. Let's get outside these walls. Let's get out and do something outside these walls, because what I'm doing here today is just speaking to y'all, and it ain't going to get nobody outside these walls to do anything different, because they're not going to hear this message, more than likely. They may. But I'm talking about evangelism. We got to get out and do something. Like I said, that's not the preacher's job. That's not just the preacher. It is, but, you know, it's not just the elders. It's all of our jobs. We understand that. So we sometimes put that job on the preacher, maybe the leaders of this congregation, and we sit back and we watch. It's not just their job. It's all of our jobs. I like Luke chapter 5, 1 through 11. It speaks that we need to be fishers of men. You know, they're catching all these. They weren't catching any of these fish, and then they were told, you know, hey, throw your nets on the other side. And they got so much fish it almost sunk the boat. But what they were being told there was, you are now fishers of men. What's he telling them? You need to go out there and you need to preach the gospel. That's what he's saying. And I'm a little bit of fisherman. I know we got some fishermen in here. I enjoy it. You aren't going to catch any fish if you're not out there in the water, if you're not actually putting a hook in the water, if you're not putting nets in the water, if you're not trying, if you're not putting in the work, you're not going to catch any fish. They don't come to you. You got to go to them. And that's kind of what we sit back and expect men, fishermen, you know, we expect Christians or the outside world to come to us and seek us out. And that's not the way that happens. You've actually got to go fishing for men. And I can spend most of all of what I'm talking about tonight, I looked at myself and realized this is not something that I'm doing very much of. So, if, you know, I'm not trying to get on, you know, one particular, I'm getting on myself, and I'm thinking if I'm struggling with this, others may be struggling with this too. But I realized I haven't been evangelizing like I need to. I can't expect this church to grow and work, go out to our community if I'm not trying. And every time I go fishing, I'm going to the lake. I'm going to the water. I'm going where they are, and I'm trying to catch fish. I've got to go out to our community some way, somehow, and I've got to try to find people to evangelize to spread the gospel, preach the word, some way, some form. We can, it's many different ways, but if you don't put in the work, it's not going to happen. I had someone tell me once time, you know, hey, going door to door is ineffective. It doesn't work anymore. It's something that they've done in the past, but really it doesn't work anymore. And I understand their point. I really do. And it may not be as effective as it used to be. And I would caution anybody that in today's time that wants to go door to door, understand this. You know, be aware of the situation, and maybe, you know, if you were going to do something like that, take somebody with you. But be aware. But I do think it's still somewhat effective. I still think it's a tool that we can use. And when I say that, ask your local politician. Chuck, did you go door to door? A bunch of them. And I believe that. And I know during the, you know, the political time frame of the local, when we do local politics here, I had somebody come door to door to me and, you know, talk to me. And I mean, it's you start seeing the signs. That's not door to door, but that's just one way. You know, signs is getting out there. Start seeing flyers get out there, and then you actually start seeing people go door to door. They get out there. They want to put a face to the name. They want to tell you who they are, what they're about, what they believe, and that's how they get votes. And honestly, that's, we can still do that here. And we, you know, Chuck was one person on the on politics there, and he was able to probably get to a lot of people. Imagine if we had some people, you know, more than just one. We can get out there. We can start spreading the word about who we are, what we do, and what we believe and all that. And we can start spreading God's word. So that's what Luke 5 talking about, being fishing and men. You've got to get out there and do something. Ask your local person that cuts grass in the area if going door-to-door works. I mean, he's going door to door some. He's seeing somebody's yard that hadn't quite been kept up to the standards of some others, and he's probably putting a flyer, knocking on the door. He's trying to get some business there. I mean, when I was a teenager and I was cutting some yards, my dad told me, he said, and this is what he used to do when he was younger. He said, you go out and knock on 100 doors. He says, if you got two people, he says, that's 2%. That's not a high number. It really is not. But that's 2 yards that now that you've got that you can cut. That's how you grow your business. And, you know, if you want two more, go out there and knock on another 100 doors. And you might get two more. You might get more than that. Who knows? But that's how you get your business. It takes work. That's maybe a lot of effort, but you've got something to build on now. You've got your yards. And we can do the same. We're trying to get Christians. We just need to go out there and put in the work. I would say Matthew 13. It speaks about going out there and spreading the seed. And that's what God's asking out of us, spreading the seed. He's not really concerned about how many people you're getting, what your percentage of conversion is. He's concerned about what you're doing. Are you putting in the work? I think 2% probably just fine with him. If you got 2 out of 100, if you went out there and talked to 100 people and you got 2 out of them, that's what God's wanting from you. That's what Matthew 13 talking about. He's talking about going out there and spreading the seed. Don't matter, don't care if it falls over here. Don't worry about if it falls over there. He says it will find good ground. There is good ground out there. If you just broadcast it out there, it will find it. And the part that it finds, it will multiply. That's what we're looking for. And I can relate to that. I look at that, and right now is the time that we're going out there. I plant green fields for the deer on my farm, and that's how I'm doing it. I'm literally throwing out seed, and I'm not concerned with if it's falling in some of the bushes or the woods over here, or if it's on the hard ground where I didn't get plowed up. I'm broadcasting it, and I realize that if I don't throw that seed out there, there's no grass going to come up when I get ready later on. It won't be there. The more seed I throw, the more grass I will get. And that's what Matthew 13 is talking about again. Throw that seed out. That's what God's looking for you to do. He'll take care of the rest. We say that all the time, but I don't feel like we do it as much as we should. And maybe I'm speaking for myself because I don't know what everybody else really does. I truly don't. I know what I'm doing. And I just don't see myself really going out there and evangelizing like I should be. Again, doing this isn't it. This right here is more like a pep rally. This is to get us focused. This is to get us, you know, re-energized and go outside these walls and start doing our job. So this is the beginning of where we start. This is not where our faith ends. And I feel like a lot of times I've fallen short on that. So when I look at that, that's one thing I think when we say, I feel like I've dropped the ball a lot of times when it comes to evangelizing and what God really wants me to do. And I've got to find some different ways of getting out there and speaking, you know, preaching the gospel. So the other thing I want to look at, and this is something that is probably not being talked about. I haven't really heard much about it, so this may be different to others. But how much do we go to the prisons and actually talk to people over there and try to evangelize to the prisons? When I talk about that, when I read these verses, I think of Hebrews 13. If you want to go ahead and turn to that, we'll try to read that. And then Matthew 25, and we'll do 35 through 46. But Hebrews 13... Here it is. But in verse 2 of Hebrews 13, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unaware. And in verse 3, remember those who are in prison, as though in prison with them, and those who are mistreated, since you are also in the body. So right there it speaks of, remember those who are in prison. And we'll turn to Matthew 25. Matthew 25, verses 35 through 46. And I'm not going to read all those, but, you know, it says, "For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me, and I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." So there again, it speaks of, you know, that being in prison, and you visited me. So I read those two things, and I don't know, for me, it's always kind of stuck out a little bit. Growing up in the church, I don't think we've talked about that very much. And I've always kind of, especially, I guess, somewhere in college, it might have started hitting home a little more. And I say that because I actually had an individual that I knew in college that was a Christian, and he went to jail. Now, he was guilty. And I always wondered, you know, like, should I went and visit him? I always considered it. I always considered going and seeing if, going and visit him. But I never did, and I feel like I should have probably. But, you know, that's not just what this verse, more than likely, I'll give credit that these verses are probably talking about in a time frame where people were going to prison unjustifiably. You know, they were not guilty. They were probably going to prison for reasons of preaching the gospel. A lot of times they were in prison for those reasons. So I understand that might not be complete apples to apples, but we probably do still have time. And, you know, today we have people who are Christians who are in jail probably. And whether they're justified or not, whether they're guilty or not, we have people who are, not Christians also that could probably better receive the word than those out here. And I feel like we have this duty to go and talk to them, to go and visit them, whether, like I said, they're guilty or not guilty, whether they're Christian or not Christian. I feel like these verses talk about us going and visiting them. And maybe I'm wrong about that, but that's kind of how I've seen it. And I've just felt like, hey, especially since I knew somebody that had a family, was a Christian, ended up doing something wrong and went to prison. And I always felt like, man, maybe I should go and visit. And so are we making that effort? Are we doing anything? Like I said, forget the Christian part of it. You know, maybe somebody's in there that's a Christian already. I know there are churches, denominational mostly, probably. I don't know about, you know, other churches that have these prison ministries, something like that, you know. But are we going out there and trying to spread the gospel to some of these other people that are in prison? When, like I said, in fact, that preaching the gospel to them could be very beneficial. You probably have a higher conversion rate over there than you would in the outside world, just because all these other external forces are not there. They don't have to get so much, to get their time away from. You know, they can focus, and they've got nothing to do but be there. So with that said, I think we could do a lot of work by doing that. Now, it's not going to fill these pews. It's not going, that's not going to help this church grow, but you would save souls. You would add, not to the local church, but you would add to the universal church. And I think that's part of our goal, you know. So I look at that, and that's kind of what I see those two verses, and I've always thought about that. And so I haven't really, growing up church, I've never really talked about that much, but it's something I feel like we could look into and see how we could do that. And I don't know much about that subject, really. But I read those verses, and I feel like there's something we could do. The other thing that I feel like we dropped the ball on, as Nux said, these are issues that individually I feel like we should have a responsibility for, and sometimes we just drop the ball on, is how are we taking care of our orphans? The Bible talks a lot about orphans, and the Bible talks much about how God will take care of those who are weak, who are fatherless, and He will be there for those. And He's using us as tools sometimes for His work to do that in. And I feel like, I realize this is a subject where a lot of institutional churches or denominational churches make an effort for the church to actually give to orphanages and stuff like that. And I realize where our stance is on that we do believe that this is a work of the individual, not the church as a whole. And that's fine. I'm right there with us. But when you say that and you agree with that, then you understand it is the work of the individual. So when we say it's not the church, it's the individuals, I have to ask ourselves, what are we doing then? Are we letting these orphans just do without because we don't have an organized effort with the church? Or are we actually going to make an attempt to do something to help these orphans? You know, I feel guilty that when I look and I say, man, you know, that's the church's responsibility. That's the individuals. And then I look at my life and I'm like, what have I done? Have I done anything? And then in the past, I could say, no, I really haven't. And that's what got me thinking about all this. And so, you know, I don't want to be that one talent servant who was given this talent and he went and hid it, and God came back and says, what'd you do with it? And he says, I didn't do anything. I didn't want to lose it. And he says, at least you could have done was stuck it in the bank and got interest off of it, but you didn't do anything with it. And I look at some of these other churches and I feel like we're a little, you know, I want to speak for myself, can be judgmental and say, yeah, they're doing something, but they're wrong in how they're doing it. And then I don't want to be up there and God say, well, what did you do? And I said, well, I didn't do anything. So here's somebody I'm judging for doing it the wrong way, but at the same time, I don't want to do at all. So I don't feel like it's my place to judge for somebody doing wrong when I'm not even doing anything at all. So if I disagree with how they're doing it, then I should find the right way to do it. And there's many different ways. There's not one way to do this and this. I just feel like as individuals, we need to take a look in ourselves. How can I help the orphans? How can I, you know, do a number? There's a list. I've just picked some, you know, but there's a list of things as individuals. It's our responsibility. I want to look into these things and figure out how is it that I can do better. And speaking of this, let's go to Acts 20. Acts 20, verse 35. And it says, in all things I have shown you that by working hard in the way we must help the weak, and remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he himself said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. I don't know that there's much greater in this world than to help those that can't help themselves. And I think we do a good job of helping the widows. Especially within our own congregation, and I think we probably from time to time individuals will help those that are outside this congregation when there's the need. And I feel like if there was an orphan in this congregation, that hypothetical situation the child lost their parents, we would have a fight over. There's so many families that would try to take that child in as their own. We would have a fight over who would be that family, because we've got so many people here that would step up and take care of that child. So I feel we've got a really blessed congregation. We're a tight-knit group. We got a great family here. And if anything happened, you know, my child, whether it would be my family or another, you know, the church family, would be taken care of because of it. So I don't, hey, when it comes to that, we're good. But what about those orphans that are not a part of this congregation? They also need our help some way, somehow. And little bit can mean a lot, you know. So that's what I'm talking about. And James chapter 1, verse 27 also speaks of that. James chapter 1, verse 27. And like I said, when it comes to orphans, there are a number of passages within the Bible that speaks about God's love for the weak and the fatherless and how we should treat them. James here. Man. Here we go. James 1, verse 27. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unstained from the world. Again, I read verses like that. That tells me what I should be doing and how I should be treating those who are weak and helpless and fatherless. We have a duty. We have a responsibility. So I say all these things, to make us understand that if it's not the church's work, it's the individual's work, then we have a responsibility for the individual. If you don't get anything else from this lesson, that's what I'm preaching here today. All these things are areas that, as individuals, we need to take a look at and see what we can do to be a better worker for the Lord in these areas. These are areas that God specifically talks about, and I think that sometimes as individuals and Christians, we're a little soft on, and I know for myself, I need to give them more thought and see what I can do. I say to understand that a Christian is to bear fruit, and you will know a Christian by their works. Matthew 7:15-19, and in many other places where it talks about you will know a Christian by their works. You will, if I tell you that this tree over here is an apple tree, and you say, no, it's not. I say, how come? There's no apples on it. I say, this one over here is a peach tree. And you tell me it's not. And I say, how come? Because there's no peaches on it. If I pulled an apple off that tree, then yes, it would be an apple tree. If there's no apples growing on that tree, it's truly an apple tree by name only. If you want to call it an apple tree, and if it was an apple tree and it didn't have any fruit coming off, it didn't have any apples, it is by name only an apple tree. I don't want to be a Christian by name only. I don't want to just come in here and I'm thought of as a Christian because I come to church and I sit in the pew and I listen. And if that's not bearing fruit, I don't think. That's going out there and doing the works of the Lord is bearing that fruit. That's how you know a Christian. Bear fruit and you people will be able to see you for who you are. So that's what Matthew 7:15-19 is all about. And if you've ever heard me speak before, you've probably heard this come out of my mouth. I say it a lot, you know, this particular, to know a Christian by their works, because we live in a time frame where the religious world is trying to tell us that all you got to do is you know, you can't work to get, you know, be saved. And they're right. Grace is what saves us, and you can't work your salvation. I get that. But they're not. They're just taking that to the bank. They're going all the way with it, and they're leaving it at that. And because it's good to hear. It's good to walk out these doors thinking, hey, I don't have to do nothing. God's got me by His grace alone. And they're not looking at these other verses that talk about how Christians are supposed to work for the Lord. They're supposed to be fruitful. I mean, nobody cares to have an apple tree if it's not going to produce an apple. Same here, guys. If you're a Christian and we're not being fruitful, then what good are we? So, with that said, there's a limited time frame, I think, that we have to work for the Lord. You know, as a child, you're too young. You can't really do the work that you need to do the Lord's work as a child. You haven't really fully grown yet. And then as you get older, you may have lost the ability that you have to do the work for the Lord that you used to have. You know, you used to could do. And we all understand that. There's a time frame in our lives that, you know, we actually have from here to here, that this is our, you know, this is our most fruitful time to be as a Christian. This is when we can work for the Lord at our best. And you don't know when you're not going to be able to do it next time. It could be a medical condition that day stops you from being able to work for the Lord the way that you would have in the past. So my point being is we don't have a whole lot of time really to work for the Lord. We, you know, you have to grow, get to that point, then you're there, and you don't never know when it's going to leave, and it could be over. And then you, if you live long enough, you will get old enough that your body will not let you do what it used to, and you're not able to do everything that you could. So we have this short period of time. Any time that we're not doing this time wasted, we don't get time back. And so my point being is, you know, if we're here today and you've got the ability to do something for the Lord, then we need to focus on what we can do, and we need to start trying to strive to get there and do what we've been asked. Also, with that said, that's my lesson. I would like to extend an invitation. And I would like to, you know, with that invitation, Luke 7:40-50, it speaks about how there was this great sinner, and because they were such a great sinner, God forgave them so much of their debt, basically, you know, and they were so grateful because of that. Point being in there was, those who have sinned great, love great. And my point being is, if you are here today and you've sinned greatly, and we all have sinned, and you've got this burden on your heart that you don't feel like you can be forgiven, the greater the sin, the greater the forgiveness. And God says the greater your love is going to be towards Him because of that. So there is no sin that is too great that God won't forgive you. He actually truly understands that the greater the sin, the greater the forgiveness, the greater your love for Him will be. So if you're not a Christian and you want to be, we're ready here tonight. We've got water and we've got time. And I say there's no better time than right now. If you are already a Christian and you know you've got sin in you, you know, and it's just it's weighing you down, and you want to get that off your shoulders, and you want to go to work for the Lord again, then we're available. We'll pray over you. You can, you know, tell us what we need to pray for, and we'll pray for you. So if you've got anything that you want to come forward for, come forward now as we sing.